This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. And we're coming to you straight after Bournemouth and going into the Newcastle game at the weekend. We've had a situation where we could feel reasonably happy that Brentford didn't lose the game on Saturday. They didn't win either. They didn't score any goals. Neither did the opposition. It was a nil-all draw down at Bournemouth. So I suppose we can look back at that and say, I'd say it's a bit of a positive, because for me, if you're not losing games, you're actually moving forward in this division. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about lots of other things. Like I said to you, we're going to talk about the Bournemouth game. We're going to talk about the Newcastle game coming up. We're going to talk about all sorts of things. My name is Billy Grant. I'm sitting here in the virtual joint with my man, the Matt Allard, in the house. How are you, the Allard?
I'm very well. I've come in for an appearance on the podcast. I feel like I'm the B team getting called up for an appearance, which is good news, and yeah, good to be here today.
There's no A team and B team. We're all one big team here, the Allard. I think it's all just due to the appearance time. Like I'm saying, it's as you know, the kickoff times keep on changing as to when the podcast is actually put together. And I've noticed there's been a lack of availability for the current kickoff times. But hopefully, we'll be able to get people to have more availability, or we'll have more flexibility in the kickoff times. Because obviously, if the kickoff times are very set, it does cause problems, doesn't it?
It does cause problems when it's not your main job, yes.
It does indeed. But anyway, listen, we're going to be moving forward. We're looking out for Laney. Laney, he was the committee. You know, we talked about the Supreme Committee that we were going to form after talking about what happened in Qatar. If you listened to the last podcast that we did, the pre-Bournemouth podcast, and the Supreme Committee, which we thought we'd have it formed by now, but then Laney's just gone and he's gone off to Poland or something else. I don't know if he's going to join another committee out there or what. So we've had to stall the formation of the Besotted Supreme Committee, but check back with us next week and hopefully it'll be up and running by then.
Yep, get on that and have thinks about it, and yeah, get back for next week.
Yeah, last week I was like, what's he talking about? I've got no idea what he's talking about. But anyway, listen, we're gonna come on to that Bournemouth game in a little bit, but I'm just gonna just talk to you. I mean, the Allard, I mean, we've been watching, you know, the Premier League, and there seems to be one player that everyone's talking about at the moment now. They're saying that he seems to be quite good. Haaland, who plays for Manchester City. Now, I know everybody's talking about him, so it's probably a bit of a dry and boring subject, but you've got a theory on Haaland, haven't you?
Well, yeah, I have, yeah. You watch The Boys, Bill?
I do watch The Boys, it's on Amazon Prime, isn't it?
Yes.
A superhero series, actually. It's a bit gory, but it's actually very good. So it's taken over my watching for the past few months as well. My brother told me about it when I went out to Spain a few months ago, and I sat down there and I've watched the first series. I'm in the middle of the second series, and my son's seen them all. He thinks it's brilliant. He's got posters up in his room and everything like that. But yeah, so what's The Boys' link with Haaland then?
Well, he's a soup, isn't he? Which is, so there's a team of seven superheroes in The Boys. That they are mostly flawed, but Haaland isn't flawed, but he is a soup, isn't he? That's exactly what he is. He's come straight out of that series. If there was like a centre forward footballer in the boys as part of the, you know, the seven, it would be Haaland.
Yeah, I mean, so, and again, this is because literally he doesn't seem to, he seems to be able to do everything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He can run, he can pass, he can shoot, he does everything. Like, you know, he's almost like, if you watch the boys, Homelander part two, is he?
Yeah, and there's collateral damage all over the pitch.
That's right. So again, you have to check out, everyone's going to have to go and check out this boys now. But like I said to you, we were just talking about it off here, saying what kind of character is it? I mean, you bring him into a side, you know, Haaland into, you know, everyone says, oh, if he goes into any team, you know, that team will just be turned on its head. But I think also, I think he has to go into a particular type of team. He's got to go into a team that is creating chances, you know. So if you put Haaland into Brighton, he will transform that team. If you put Haaland into, you know, probably even Leeds United, he'll transform that team. These are teams that create chances. If he came into Brentford, you know, he would transform that team. If he goes into, I think Nottingham Forest, I think at the bottom now, and Bournemouth are the teams that are not creating big opportunities at the moment now. Will Haaland be able to go in and change that team if they're actually not creating the opportunities for him to do what he's going to do? You know, he might take them up from sort of kind of 20th place to sort of 14th or 15th place, but he's not going to make the massive change probably that he might do with other teams that are actually creating stuff. So that's the superhero value of him.
He's like the icing on the cake, isn't he? You know, at Man City, and that Man City have managed to win the title, win everything apart from the Champions League without a centre forward, and now they got a centre forward. So they were scary enough as it is. Now they're double scary, and it's right. I think he would fit into any team because he's going to give any team goals. But just putting him as the icing on the cake of that City team is pretty scary.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting because, you know, you're talking about Manchester City. We talk about all these other teams in the league. The question came up, especially after we played Bournemouth, and we're going to talk about the Bournemouth game in a little bit, you know, and Brentford ourselves, who we believe that we're doing quite well. But the question is, are there three worse teams than us in the league at the moment, do you think, the Allard? Because, you know, we're quite a few games in now. We're a sort of kind of, you know, early October. And even at this stage, early October last season, we kind of had a real feel for last season. We knew how Norwich City were doing. We knew how kind of all the other teams were doing around us. We knew how Watford were doing. And we had a real feel as to how the kind of bottom of the league was going to form. And we felt, actually, I remember we played West Ham, I think it was last weekend, is where we played West Ham, and then we beat West Ham. So we came out of that feeling very comfortable in ourselves, thinking, cool, we're not anywhere near the relegation zone at this moment in time. We feel quite good. So I'm just wondering, do you get the same feel about who are the three worst teams than us in the league at the moment now?
I would always have said Bournemouth were gonna struggle this season. There's a bit of a revision maybe, having seen them on Saturday, because they do look organised, and I guess we'll talk about that in more depth. You kind of feel that Forest could fall apart depending on what they do next with Steve Cooper. So, and then, but is there anyone else? I mean, last year, although Burnley tonked us, you kind of knew Burnley were going to be in trouble, you know, as well as the other two teams that got relegated. And I think by this point, you could kind of see Norwich were going down, and Watford were going to have a long season, but it's difficult this season, like with Leicester being near the bottom, but I don't think Leicester are going to get relegated. I watched them Monday, and as long as they don't get like a string of injuries, they've just got too many good players, really. So, yeah, it's still an interesting discussion, finding three worst teams or three teams that are worse than us, which is ultimately what we're saying, isn't it?
And coming back to this discussion, I mean, 5:38, we don't normally go to 5:38 this early because they're the ones that do the stats predictions, very well-renowned company for doing that. And just to show you what they've got Nottingham Forest predicted as bottom of the league, 71% chance of relegation, they say at the moment. Now they're going to finish on 53.8 points. I don't know how they're going to get 8.8 points, but that's what they predict. Actually, no, 60, is it 53.8? No, that's the SPI. So 29 points, sorry, that said they're going to get. And then there's a big gap between them and then the second bottom of the league, which is Bournemouth, who they predict is going to finish with 35 points, second bottom of the league. They said they're 48% chance of getting relegated. So it's a 50-50 chance of Bournemouth getting relegated. Then the third bottom, interestingly, is Southampton, which is going to finish on 40 points, they predict, with 29% chance of relegation. But to be fair, between Southampton, Wolves, the F word, which is Fulham, Leicester. It's 29, 28, 24 and 21% at the moment. And even Leeds United are below that at 19%. Everton then 17%. Then you've got Crystal Palace at 12%. West Ham 10%. We are 8% chance of relegation. Or is it 9% chance of relegation at the moment now? So you kind of see how things pan out. Now, the reason why I say you've got to be careful about this, I remember that they had Nottingham Forest at a very low chance of promotion last season. When it came to Christmas time, I think it was less than 10%, I think it was. And obviously they turned that on its head. So things can turn on its head, but obviously the team has to turn on its head. Things have to be, things have to change dramatically. And so for Nottingham Forest, they're in a bit of a crux moment at the now. I know that Cooper isn't a very... he's not massively liked within the Brentford camp, you know, whether or not that's Thomas Frank himself, you know, because obviously there's the bit of the beef after the playoff semi-final, not the last playoff final at Wembley, but the previous one when we played them in the semi-final, there was a bit of beef between Cooper and Frank. And then after that, there's a big beef between Swansea and Brentford for some ridiculous reason. I don't know why. So, and then he's moved on to Forest, and that kind of has carried on to Forest as well, where a lot of people don't particularly want Forest to do well because they don't like Cooper. I've got Forest mates, and I like them, and I think they should do all right. I don't think they've done the right thing buying 3,422 players, but that's a different story altogether. But Nottingham Forest are in a crux moment at the moment now, aren't they, the Allod?
Yeah, definitely. What happens next? Do they get rid of Cooper? I think personally, for Forest, that would be a bad thing to do. But if you also look at the socials and stuff, most of the Forest fans think that Cooper's not good enough for the Premier League. So yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? I think is people talking about Benitez to go into Forest? Who knows? It's sort of unraveling there at the moment. They didn't look great on Monday against Leicester. They looked bad at the back, and they didn't look great up front either. And yet they've got this selection of players that everybody says, well, you should be able to gel them together into a team. But life ain't that simple. You can't just go out and buy random players. And in my head, I don't think Cooper's probably identified a load of players and said, bring them in, I'll sort it out. I suspect he's sort of been lumbered with a load of players and he's trying to sort it out.
That's interesting. And it's interesting you say that as well, because obviously, we had a feature last season called the Spreadsheet Winker, which is Will, also the Spreadsheet Winker. He's featured a lot less on the podcast this year, only mainly because he's studying. He's studying, he's teaching, he's doing all sorts of stuff and stuff. But the reason why I say that is quite interesting is that the Spreadsheet Winker actually came from Nottingham Forest. Okay, and it came from Nottingham Forest because when we were in the Premier League and in the Championship, the Forest fans used to call us Spreadsheet Winkers, because when we used to play them, fans would actually say to them how, our XG would be quite a lot higher than theirs, because the way that they played their football, they were quite, not so conservative, but they used to basically sit quite deep and then hit players on the break and maybe score goals from sort of kind of 25, 30 yards at times, which were very low quality chances, but really, really good goals. So we turn around to them and say, some fans were saying we're not better than you. So they used to call the Brentford fans Spreadsheet Winkers. And this went on for ages and ages and ages until we got promoted. And then the Spreadsheet Winkers were in the Premier League and Nottingham Forest remained in the Championship. Now that they've been promoted now, but a lot of fans, or Nottingham Forest fans, are very, very obviously nervous about, why they've signed so many players, and they're nervous about certain amount of things. And there's this note that's gone out, which is educating the ignorant, Nottingham Forest transfer activity. And there's this note, I'm not sure if it's been sent out by the executives at Forest or somebody else who's trying to educate people, but they've said, why have we signed so many players? Out of the 26 first team players from last season, only 11 remain. And that number is expected to decrease. And this is the reason why they've had to buy 60 new players to replace the 15 who had departed so far. How can they afford it? They said they've spent 137 million so far, including add-ons. They haven't talked about the wages, but we won't talk about that. But promotion to the Premier League is estimated to be worth 170 million, which can rise to 300 million. That's how we can afford it. So they've done the old explain. But then the interesting one is that they're explaining where people are saying Forest are just buying anyone. I said quite the opposite, actually. The methodical recruitment strategy at Forest sees data analytics used to identify potential suitors, similar to how Brentford do things. The players must be compatible within the system. So all of a sudden, Forest are actually putting their hands up and calling them and turning into Spreadsheet Winkers, like, you know what I'm saying? So it happens to us all, doesn't it, the Allard?
Yeah, the thing is, though, it takes a bit of practice to get it right, and who knows if they've got it right. I don't even know what is their system. Do they have a standard system? They look like they need somebody. They need a way to get literally. They essentially need to get the centre of the team working, a centre forward, a centre back, centre midfield, and just somehow build from that. But it looks like a struggle at the moment for them.
It does. I mean, the question I'm going to ask, and listen, yeah. I mean, we're going to come back to the boys again. I mean, they've sent £137 million and wages on top, which I said to you, they're not even talking about that, because that's a whole heap of more money, Premier League money as well, because they would have... I mean, Lingard ain't going to be going to Nottingham Forest for like £5,000 a week. You know that, what I'm saying? Yeah. So they've been spending a whole heap of money, but surely if they've got that much money... they should be able to pull in another soup, because there must be another soup out there somewhere, isn't there?
Yeah, there must be. I'm trying to think where, but yeah, if they go out there and find a soup, to be honest, they are about as effective at the moment as the team of soups, you know, in the boys, aren't they? I mean, they are like that. You could almost say they're just a group of individuals that aren't very good at playing together as a team.
Yeah, indeed. So now you're going to have to go off and watch The Boys as well, which is a very good series. It's a very interesting series. And Nottingham Forest, hopefully, if they can find their soup, hopefully they won't find a soup in the next transfer window, because that, if that does, that's going to turn itself on its head, because at the moment, we have a feeling that one of those relegation places has been taken up already, but maybe a soup might come in. Maybe a soup terrorist, either, might come in and actually turn it on its head.
Absolutely, yeah. Soup terrorist, it could be dangerous, but you never know. It might work.
That's right. Anyway, listen, we got to crack on. We got to talk about the match at the weekend. We're going to talk about the Bournemouth game after this little break. Saturday, Bournemouth. No goals. What a terrible game that was. It was really quite drab. And listen, maybe... you know, I've started off and I've gone on this real negative about the game, but maybe the thing is that we've been served up with such great football. We've seen so many goals at the beginning of the season. All of a sudden, if something is just not quite to our liking, we immediately go on to a negative about it. We're not used to seeing this type of football. We're not used to seeing Brentford not scoring any goals. We're not used to people not scoring against us either. It was a bit of a strange one, wasn't it, on Saturday, the Allard?
Yeah, it was. I think after about 20 minutes, you kind of worked out this was how it was going to play out. It didn't feel like anybody was really creating chances, certainly not big chances. Bournemouth were really quite effective, to be honest. They seemed to be well drilled. The players, you felt, knew what they were doing. That's the difference, you know, between, say, Bournemouth and what you see with Forest as it stands at the moment. The reality is they're probably a very, very good Championship side that are playing in the Premier League, but they're well drilled. They haven't done what Forest have done. They haven't gone out there, bought loads of players that don't understand the system. And, you know, we talk about you need a system, really, and buy for the system. And Bournemouth have got a system, and it works pretty good. They're not going to be the easiest team to beat this year. Maybe they're on a bit of a sort of new manager bounce at the moment, a bit like Burnley had towards the end of last season. So maybe that changes. Maybe they lose a game and then they try and change things. But to be honest, they keep doing what they're doing. They'll pick up points here and there. I don't know if it'll be enough, but they will.
Yeah, I mean, and just going back to this game from an XG perspective, Brentford 1.18 compared to Bournemouth 0.79. We both kind of had the sort of similar type chances, actually, inside the area. You know, Bournemouth had one big chance from Jefferson Lerma and 51 minutes. That was about a 4 in 10 possibility of going to the back of the net. And then we had Ivan Toney, who had a chance on 74 minutes, which was about another 4 in 10 chance of going into the back of the net as well. We also had another relatively large chance, which was Ivan Toney again on 81 minutes, which was about a 2 in 10 chance of going in the back of the net there as well, which obviously didn't happen. And they also had one on the edge of the area as well, which is Jefferson Lerma, which was about a 1 in 10, which was in which is injury time, you know, which we'll go into in a minute. So overall, it's kind of like we cancelled ourselves out to a certain extent. Brentford fans would probably turn around and say that we felt that we could have or should have won the game. Bournemouth had one particular plan, which was basically not to allow us to score. They kept it very, very tight, but and we found it hard to break them down. And then there's a few questions sort of going on around about, you know, whether or not we are suffering. Is that the right word? I don't know. From maybe the lack of having a Norgaard in the midfield. I don't know if you had any thoughts on that, the Allard.
Yeah, so if we just go back, the first thing to say is it was one of those games that was either going to be won by a bit of magic or by a bad referee decision. Or maybe, you know, maybe a good referee decision, but something like a penalty or whatever. I think the bit of magic was the Tony chance, wasn't it? Which started off with the Jensen pass, then it gets knocked through to Tony and Tony comes through. And that was that would have been one of the best goals of the season if that had gone in. It would have been an incredible team goal. The penalty stuff I'm sure we'll get to. Weren't they penalties? So there is all that sort of thing going on. And then, yeah, it you just sort of think, would we have lost that game last season?
I think these are the key questions that we've been asking all season so far. And this is where you start looking at how have Brentford advanced? How much have we advanced from last season? Yes, there are certain games that we would have lost last season, which we end up drawing. You know, Leicester is a prime example, you know, of a game that, you know, last season, you know, is out the window. We would have lost it, but this season is different. So there is a certain resilience to our side. And this season, again, against Bournemouth, you know, okay, again, we'll talk about the VAR in a bit, but there are a few, you know, that heart and mouth moments that we did have, which probably would have gone our way, not because they should have gone our way, but sometimes those decisions could have gone the other way very, very easily. Yeah. So, you know, we've got a couple of things, you know, in our favour this time.
Just to come back to the midfield.
Yeah.
Yeah, the midfield. So the midfield. So, yeah, we do miss Norgaard. I think in my head, Janel just fits in there and everything should be cool and fine. I'm not sure that's quite the way the management see it, because I think with Norgaard, I reckon you may well play De Silva and Jensen as your free midfield. I think with Jan out, there's more of a, we should play Baptiste. Maybe Frank comes into the next game or something like that. I think the balancing, I think they're more confident with Norgaard to go with two really creative players and maybe less so when it's Jan out. Certainly in the games where you should be sort of, I mean, you think about Bournemouth, I'm sort of thinking we should be controlling the game, get the creative players into midfield.
Just talking about players and how players are playing this game, I mean, you know, Bournemouth are coming at us. I mean, the player that stood out for me immediately and I thought is brilliant, and he also won the Besotted Global Man of the Match, which is voted by all our global posse, our little social media network we've got out there, and other people who managed to vote that as well, which was Ben Mee. And I thought he's had a great game. And interestingly, it's actually his third Global Man of the Match that he's had and the second one in a row. He's turning out to be a revelation, particularly as a free transfer. And we talked about this before, we touched on it before, about, you know, because Ben Lee's obviously stepped in because we've got injuries and we've got, you know, our defence is a little bit all over the place, you know, with regards to players coming in and out, you know, but we've now got Ethan Pinnock, who's looks like he's coming back from injury. We've seen him on the training ground. I think he played a B team match maybe or something. I'm sure he played a match recently as well, which is an announcement that, you know, he is coming back into the scene. I know Pontus went off injured in this game, which means that maybe there's a little bit of flexibility there for other players to come through. However, Ben Mee, he seems like he's a player that, you know, we can't leave him out the side if we've got a full strength squad, can we?
He's solid, isn't he? I mean, you know, he's the man that puts his body on the line. He wins the tackles that he needs to win. He wins the headers he needs to win. He doesn't shirk. He's a proper classic centre back. Maybe not the sort of, I suppose Pontus is of a similar mould, but it's not really the sort of centre backs we've seen at Brentford in the last 5 or 6 years. So he's just taken to it. And who knows if we hadn't assigned him, where we'd be? Because to be honest, we'd have been struggling. I think we'd have had to have kept Mads Beck and not send him out on loan, or we'd have had to have found somebody else to play on the left with Pinnock being out. I just think he was a really, really astute signing. And what was his chance? Do you know what? Didn't he have a header that he could have scored? I think. trying to think.
Yeah, I'm just look, because there's lots of little ones.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't as good a chance as I thought.
Yeah, lots of tiny little sort of minus of kind of 10, you know, Damsgaard had one at 3 minutes, which was 6%. Janssen had one on 12 minutes, which was 7%. You know, Ivan Toney had another one, which is small. So I'm struggling.
Yeah, maybe not. I thought there was something from a corner or something. And I think we sort of, and I'd say we missed Pinnock at the corners. I'd say that's the one bit where Ben Mee doesn't quite do everything else that we need him to do. I think Pinnock at corners is really strong. It'll be really interesting with Pinnock being fit. And I don't think Pontus is playing this weekend, if I remember what I've read recently. I think the injury is still problematic.
Yes.
I think that might almost solve a selection issue coming up as to whether who do you drop to get Pinnock back in, because I do think you put Pinnock back in.
Yeah, and talking about that, Ben Mee did have a chance on 18 minutes, which is 5%. So 5 in 100 would have gone. So it wasn't a particularly, wasn't a big chance, but it was a chance as he had. It was straight in front of the goal as well, probably roughly on the 18-yard box as well. So, which is all good. But listen, we talked a lot about this game. What we're going to do is we're going to go back to the terraces, listen to what the fans had to say immediately after the game against Bournemouth.
In the end, I'll take the point. It wasn't a game of any clear-cut chances. I can't see it being first on Match of the Day tonight. Brentford, clearly the superior team in terms of, you know, possession, particularly in the first half. However, the only chance we really had were like kind of block shots in the box. Toney was unlucky with a couple. 60 minutes, I got very excited after quite a turgid first half when Thomas made some really good subs. But I thought we'd get more attacking then. It didn't seem to happen. Bournemouth very happy to sit back in two banks of four and just mop up everything we threw at them. So yeah, in the end, disappointing game, but we'll take a point.
Yeah, I thought it was quite flat, to be honest with you. I thought both teams like didn't have anything going forward really. They had sort of five behind the ball and then had the other three in front, so for us to try and penetrate them was quite hard. I thought we could have been a bit better going forward, but it just seemed to be quite slow going out from the back. Not really a Brentford performance, to be honest with you. It was a bit bizarre at the end, obviously with the handball situation, the ref blowing up. We had a couple of chances. Tony's a bit close, but you know, in all honesty, it was quite a flat game, to be honest with you.
It was just frustrating today. We were the better team by far. Did anybody create anything of quality? Probably not. Tip my hat to the referee in the first half. He's gone to the screen. He's declined their appeal for the penalty. So well done there. But not much between the teams. The referee stood his ground again at the end when there could have been something there. But yeah, just a disappointing game, and it's one that you feel that's got away. But did we create anything in the final third? Probably not. And I think begrudgingly fair result.
They certainly set themselves up not to lose, didn't they? Very organised, but not really pushing out. I think they might need to change their tactics to get some more points. But we had a go. I think we got caught at the end, whether we try and win it or whether we hang on to the point and nearly the Fulham again and throw it away by trying too hard and being a bit clumsy. But I thought overall we were fairly solid, didn't create too much. Love to see the Toney chance again that I thought was going to burst the back of the net and going over, and obviously the penalty as well. We'll see at the end whether that was handball or not. I mean, they seem pretty adamant it was. It obviously wasn't, because it wasn't given.
The VAR probably just said to him, look, there's nothing in that, so just blow the whistle. So that's fine. But I think you got both VAR decisions would have been right anyway. So, yeah, but we didn't do enough to win that game. We never looked like winning. I don't think they ever looked like winning. That was as nil-nil as you could ever hope for.
I thought 3 points were there for the taking, without doubt. Bournemouth didn't offer much, lumped it forward a bit. But we missed Ericsson today. That was the difference. Someone with creativity. Someone who can change the game with a ball that you're not expecting, you know?
Sticking my glass half full head on, it's a point. If VAR had gone against us, you got to question whether we would have come back into that game. It wasn't clicking in terms of like the final pass, and it wasn't clicking in terms of us getting really in behind and hurting them. Toney had a shot which you know could have hit the back of the net. He fired that wide. That's probably as close as we got apart from the Aya header in the first half. We go back to London, not a great distance back, with a point under our arms, and we regroup and we look forward to going up for a big weekend up in Newcastle next weekend.
So there you have it, the fans straight after the match down at Dean Court, Bournemouth. Used to go there so many times. It's so weird sort of playing them in the Premier League now, you know, on that same level before. It used to be Division 3, but now it's Premier League playing them. And Dean Court, like I said to you, and just talking about that game, strengths and the weaknesses. I mean, Bournemouth's strengths, according to Who Scored, there were no significant strengths, but they were poor at finishing. And for Brentford, the one thing we were good at is we stole the ball often from the opposition, but we were also poor at finishing. Bournemouth played with width, you know, attacked down the right-hand side, and they favoured crossing the ball, whereas we attacked down the right-hand side as well, and we dominated possession. So, you know, you could see from that, you know, we were in the game, but we didn't actually, you know, smash them to pieces. Like, you know, Ben Mee, you know, was a top boy, you know, Neto for Bournemouth, top boy as well, and then Marcus Sensi as well, Rico Henry and Chris Meppham also got good props as well on the ratings front. But Bournemouth, it's almost like one of those games that we need to put to bed, don't we?
Yeah, I think you can beat yourself up, because I think you can sort of say, well, you know, Bournemouth are going to get relegated. And I don't know if that is the case, but I think that's the way people view it. They probably view them as the weakest team in the league, but they've done all right this season. They've got some points, you know, in the bag, and they have a bit more confidence probably than some other teams could have had in a similar position, say the, you know, some of the other recently promoted teams who might struggle at the beginning of the season. So they're doing all right. I don't think you should beat yourself up too much about it. I think when it comes down to it, we didn't create enough. I mean, that was it. You know, Bournemouth didn't create a whole lot. We kept a clean sheet. We didn't create much at all. We didn't really create any of those big sort of chances, you know, any of the 0.4s, the 0.5s, nothing like that. And so I don't think you should beat yourself up too much, is my sort of thinking.
Okay, and just coming back to me, you talk about creating opportunities and scoring goals. I mean, Ivan Toney had 6 shots during that match. We talked about the big chance that he had, but we haven't talked about it in context of what's been going on in around him. So obviously he went off with England. He went off and was part of, well, he's part of the squad. He wasn't part of the squad against Italy, away to Italy, but he was a part of the squad at home to Germany, which England ended up drawing 3-2. He didn't play in that game. Now, do you think that may have affected Ivan Toney, him being part of it but not actually playing, and then he's come back? And, you know, what do you think is going through his head? Do you think there may be frustration? Do you think he's just put it aside? Do you think it's affected his game here at all?
I think it depends what conversation he had with Gareth Southgate when he got, you know, his initial conversation with him. I mean, if his initial conversation was, look, I'll be honest with you, you're not going to play in either of these two games unless we have a dramatic number of injuries, but I want you to come along, I want you to train with the side, etc., then I think he's probably come back and he just cracks on. If the conversation is a different one, or there's no conversation and you sort of go along thinking you're going to be given an opportunity to prove yourselves, maybe he does feel a bit hard done by. Doesn't really affect his... That depends what kind of guy Ivan Toney is. He's got a lot of self-confidence, hasn't he? So hopefully it wouldn't affect him too much. I think if you look at the sort of the records, I don't think this is unusual for Southgate to put people into a squad and not play them. You just hope that, you know, that conversation happens at the beginning to explain why he's there and what he's there for.
And I'm hoping the conversation wasn't, Ivan, mate, you're a really good player, but you really need to move to like a bigger club like Arsenal or West Ham or Tottenham or Manchester City, something like that. That's the conversation that we don't want, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But that conversation is probably a little bit out of his control. If you do have that conversation, it needs one of those clubs to think that they could fit Ivan Toney into their team. I don't know how many do or will.
Let's check out JB to see what facts and funk he's got in the bag.
Hello, Jonathan Birchall here again. Although a 0-0 draw wasn't everyone's desired result on Saturday, it was our second clean sheet of the season, and our 11th in the Premier League. But it was more than a year ago since our last one away from home. Then it was at Wolves on the 18th of September 2021. For David Rea, it was his 42nd in league games for us, which ranks as the 8th highest in our league history. In the last 50 years, there have only been more clean sheets kept by Len Bond, with 46, and Kevin Dearden, with 73. Jerry Cakebread has had the most, with 92 during the 50s and 60s. Saturday also saw us win 8 corners during the game.
the most we've had this season and equal with the number awarded in the match against Manchester United. The most we had last season was 12 during the home game with Spurs, which also ended 0-0. Looking ahead to Saturday, and it's our 8th visit to Newcastle. We previously visited for 5 league games and 2 in the cups. We've never kept a clean sheet in any of them, and those matches have in fact seen a total of 34 goals scored, at an average of just under 5 per game. So back-to-back 0-0s is probably unlikely.
Let's move on. We're going to go off. We're going to have another little drink. I know we were talking about tea last week. You know, we had lots and lots of tea. I mean, I know the pound came crashing down, but I think obviously what's happened now, they had a listen to the podcast. I think the Supreme Committee had a word as well. And all of a sudden, the pound's gone crashing back up again. So the price of tea's come down. So I've actually managed to duck into all sorts of tea because it's now affordable again. I'm going to pop off, get myself a cup of tea. And we're going to... Are you going to get a cup of tea as well, the Allard?
Yeah, I'm going to have a cup of tea, yes.
Tea
yes.
For two, once again.
Then. Tea, yeah.
That's right. And we're going to come back and we're going to talk about Newcastle. So Saturday, we're going up to Newcastle and very excited too. We are going back to Newcastle. We've sold out our allocation again, which I think is pretty impressive. I mean, I know you might say, ah, yes, Premier League, you should sell out every game, but it is a long way away Newcastle. There are train strikes on the day, so people are struggling to get up there. So they're basically going by, you know, by train, by car, by plane. We've got one of our crew, he's flying over to Ireland, then he's flying in somewhere else, and then he's coming down. You know, there's all sorts going on to make sure that they can get to that match. So it's a good one, and Newcastle is always a great away day. I know it may be a little bit cliche, they say, oh yeah, Newcastle, you know, it's, you know, it is a particular, but the reason why it's brilliant is just because the fans up there, they're so friendly, the place is really friendly, the ground is right in the middle of the city, like literally, it's like having a ground in Leicester Square, you know what I'm saying? And then it's just got loads of bars around that they go to, and they're all open to opposition fans, and they're just really friendly, and it's a great place to go for a weekend. So I'll be up there on Friday with the Laneys, missing hopefully the train strikes on Friday, back on the Sunday, hopefully missing the train strikes back on Sunday, and we're going up there, and fingers crossed we're going to have ourselves a right laugh. But coming back to Newcastle, a very different proposition this season than when we met them last season, which was a little bit annoying because I think when we met them last season, Eddie Howe, you know, had kind of just started to get a grip on things, didn't he, when we played him. And we ended up playing Newcastle, and I mean, the game, I mean, I had a brilliant weekend last weekend with my whole family, my wife and kids, everyone like that, brilliant weekend. But that was topped off by a mad bonkers 3-3 game. It was a fantastic game. It was heart and mouth moments, you know, we 3,000 Bees fans, and it was just great. And in the end we didn't lose, but we saw some great football. We saw Joe Linton in the flesh for the first time, who we were like quite in awe with him, and it was something. But and I think even if anything, some Bees fans were a bit disappointed we didn't get the 3 points, because at that time Newcastle were dead and buried. A lot of people thought they were going to get relegated, but they had just turned it around. But they're a different proposition this season, aren't they, the Allard?
Yeah, I mean, was that Eddie Howe's first game or one of his first games? I think
it was.
Yeah, and you know, they've got two things, haven't they? I mean, they've got money, and there's obviously other discussions about where that money comes from. But if you look at it from sort of a football point of view rather than a, you know, another point of view, which is less savoury, they've got the money and they've got a good manager. I mean, I just think Eddie Howe is a good manager. I think he's done a great job there so far. They haven't gone massive on it. They're not doing what, say, Forest did. It feels like they're building a team. They've got a spine. They've got some fantastic players. You know, your Sam Maximan, obviously, and your Joel Linton that was already there. You know, and then Trippier comes in, and he's decent, isn't he? Then Almiron looks decent. You've got Wilson, who's, albeit he's injured quite a lot, but then when he's injured, they've gone out and they've got, is it Isaac, the Swedish centre forward who's been pressed in the Euros, has come in. They're a good side. They're getting better. They're going to be a challenge this weekend for sure. And they're very different proposition to the side we saw under Steve Bruce, which seems remarkable that I don't know if it was this time last year or maybe a bit longer than a year ago, Steve Bruce was running that football team into the ground.
Yeah, he did. And I think coming back to it, I think Eddie Howe, it was his first game, but I think he had COVID. So he actually couldn't be in the ground last season, if I remember rightly. Let me get Newcastle fans, correct me if I'm wrong. And so he was kind of, I think he might have been sort of conducting them, but he actually wasn't in the ground itself. So he got that result. And then he sort of turned up for them after that. I mean, tell you something. I mean, we could talk about Newcastle till the cows come home, but we will go over to one of our chums, and we've got Norm from the True Faith podcast, and he knows everything about Newcastle, so he's got quite a lot of info in Newcastle. So we thought, instead of us banging on forever, let's go up to Norm, see what he has to say. We'll come back and then we'll talk a little bit more about Newcastle.
Hello, all Brentford fans, I'm Norman Reilly. I work with the True Faith Newcastle United podcast and fanzine. You can find us online, www.true-faith.co.uk. We're on Twitter at TFNUFC, and you can find me at Norman G. Reilly. If for whatever mad reason you want to give us a follow or give me a follow, so I've been with True Faith for around 5 years now. Obviously, the last 5 years at Newcastle have been incredibly interesting. In terms of me being a fan, my first match was in 1986, a lovely 4-0 Boxing Day home defeat to Everton, who I believe that season went on to win the league. That was the Everton side of Paul Bracewell, Adrian Heath, Graham Shaw, Peter Reid, Neville Southall, Kevin Ratcliffe, an outstanding side that actually won a Cup Winners' Cup to boot alongside the league twice in the 80s and a couple of FA Cups. Newcastle, I mean, obviously, you know, I mentioned the last 5 years that I've been with True Faith. We've gone from the, for want of a better word, frugal ownership of Mike Ashley, the complete and utter lack of ambition, wanting to do everything as cheaply as possible, to the point where we were relegated twice under his ownership in 14 years. That was something that never happened before. In fact, previous to Mike Ashley arriving, we'd only been relegated twice in my whole history as a football club, from the top flight into the second division, the championship, whatever you want to call it. Mike Ashley really, it got to the point where, as a fan base, there was a feeling that we were just a bit of a zombie club. The stadium was dilapidated. The fact that he got in Rafa Benitez after years of appointing absolute no marks as managers, Steve McLaren being a particular low point, he got Rafa Benitez in. And the reality is, I would say as a fan base, most of us were quite happy with how things were under Rafa. Despite Ashley's lack of ambition, we knew that in Rafa's hands, at least we'd have a team that was put out that would compete, and we had a manager who wanted the very best for the club regardless of the limited resources that he was given. Obviously, Rafa's ambitions extended beyond shopping in the basement and working for a man who ultimately was questioning Rafa's own abilities as a football manager by going out and purchasing players himself without any consultation with Rafa. And we then appointed Steve Bruce, an absolute disaster of an appointment, which completely sucked the life out of many fans. In fact, many fans decided to walk away. I gave up my season ticket at that point. I couldn't cope with paying the club for a season ticket to go and watch the absolute turgid monstrosity that we had to put up with under Steve Bruce. And obviously, Bruce does have many friends in the media, so as a fan base, we got lots of stick asking us what did we expect. He's a good manager. A classic being he's a good family man. What relevance that bears to being a good football manager, I do not know. But obviously, subsequently, Bruce has gone on to West Brom, where he is completely and utterly destroying that club as well. So it does kind of feel like a bit of a vindication. And then the takeover happens, and regardless, I guess, of what your moral stance may be on it, it's deeply problematic for me in many respects, but at the same time, it's a football club that I love, so there is a conflict there. However, regardless of that, the fact is that we are now an incredibly ambitious club, and we've appointed in Eddie Howe a manager who I believe has the capacity to really take this club forward, to actually win trophies with the club. Last season, when he took over after the Wolves game, as I say, that was a particular low point. We lost away to Wolves under Bruce, and it was just doom and gloom. Howe comes in, the takeover happens, Howe comes in, and obviously his first game is a 3-3 draw at home to, guess who, Brentford. A bit of a chaotic match, but really what happened on the pitch kind of represented where the club was at in chaos. And the work that the new ownership have done within only 12 months, and the work that Howe's done, has been frankly spectacular. The purchases that we've made have been superb. And last season, ultimately, to go from one win in 19 or one win in 20 games to being the bottom three for the bulk of the season, to end up finishing 11th with form that was only bettered by Liverpool and Man City over the last half of the season is truly incredible. And how is, you know, he deserves all the plaudits. That was some spectacular achievement. And in terms, obviously, of the division and the quality of rivals, I think that, you know, last season when we started the season, we had an imbalanced squad. We had some very talented individuals, but we lacked strength in certain areas. However, you look at players like Alan Saint-Maximin, you look at Callum Wilson, and you think there's a nucleus of good players there. You know, even Martin Dubravka in goal was a decent goalkeeper. He's moved on now, obviously, but there was a decent nucleus of players in the additions that came in over the transfer window. Bruno Guimaraes, incredible player. Dan Byrne was an inspired signing. Matt Target on loan, fantastic. And the one who really set the ball rolling was obviously Kieran Trippier, signing a world class fullback from Atletico Madrid, the current Spanish champions at the time, when you were bottom of the Premier League, really shows intent. And it really, I guess, alerts other players to the fact that he has a club who must be going places, because if they weren't, then why would Kieran Trippier sign for them? And at that point, you know, from that point onwards, really, we did once how found out the style that worked best for us, the 4-3-3 formation, counter-attacking. And once the players bought into it, once he built up the confidence, we absolutely took off. And ultimately, I think finishing above teams that all season looked way, way better than us was one heck of an achievement. Yourselves included, actually, to finish above you, given where we were in December compared to yourselves, was a superb achievement. You could bring Crystal Palace into that as well. They were having a decent season. We ended up finishing above them. So all in all, a truly, truly spectacular season on many levels. And how, you know, ultimately, how I would say at the time, personally, when he was appointed, there were various names being bandied around. Obviously, Rafa Benitez was at Everton at that point, but if Rafa had been available, I would have taken him back at the drop of a hat, because I love the man. Conte was a name that was bandied around as well, but he was never going to come because he wants to be in the Champions League as quick as possible. However, would I have taken Conte over Howe at the time? Of course I would, you know, based on their respective records. So Howe arrived at Newcastle, it wasn't necessarily a case of me thinking, oh, he's not good enough. It was a case of thinking, well, I think there are managers who are better out there, perhaps, or have got more experience. And obviously, Howe's last season at Bournemouth, you have to look at it and think, well, they did end up relegated. Very mitigating circumstances, and the fact that he kept Bournemouth, a team with, you know, 11,000 fans in the Premier League for as long as he did, was real testament to his character. But ultimately, the last job on his CV was the one where he was relegated. So my concerns were there initially, but that disappeared within a week. It really did. The impression he gave on the training ground, the noises coming out of the club from the players were just absolutely spectacular. And since then, he has gone from strength to strength. And to be perfectly honest with you, I think every single Newcastle fan you encounter would say the board and how there isn't one manager right now in world football, and I mean that wholeheartedly, that I would rather have steering the helm at Newcastle United. He has done an incredible job, and he will go on, I believe, to achieve great things. He is very, very much loved. And in terms of this season so far, it's been an interesting start. We've started the season playing wonderful football. If you look at our XG rate, I hate to bring these statistics in because I'm a bit old school, I'm in my 40s, and all the new statistical analysis of the game, whilst I find some of it fascinating, sometimes I think it can really detract from just the purity of the football itself on the pitch and the crack with you and your mates. When you start to focus too heavily on these intricacies, which can make it sound a bit, I hesitate to use the word nerdy, because nerdy can be quite a positive word. It just can, it can take away a bit of the debate and the fun, right? But ultimately, look, let's look at the stats in this case. The XG is incredible. We're starting to play possession-based football. We're dominating sides in terms of the possession. Obviously, you know, take away a couple of teams like Man City and Liverpool. But even then, you know, you look at the Liverpool game away, the only game we've lost this season, where you really ought to have been tuning up in that game. I think Isak has a perfectly good goal disallowed by VAR. And despite the fact Liverpool bettered our possession, we, I think, were relatively in control of that game, and they got a winner after extra time had finished. Just one of those games where you think, God, Jurgen Klopp, as much as I like you on many levels, you can be a bit of a prick at times. But a great start against Nottingham Forest. Again, we absolutely dominated. We walked over them. I mean, subsequently, Forest have turned out to be a pretty terrible side. But, you know, a newly promoted side, the first game of the season, they've been out the top flight for a while. It's a potential banana skin, and we negotiated it quite comfortably. Probably should have won by 4 or 5 goals. The other performances, Palace at home, you could argue we deserve to win. In fact, again, VAR hammered us, a perfectly good goal disallowed in that game. The only games I think where we maybe haven't deserved a win are Brighton away and Bournemouth at home. Brighton away, we probably overall deserve to lose. Again, though, we have a goal disallowed that you could argue may have stood without VAR. And Brighton are an excellent side. Obviously, Potter leaving may well impact on them, but the new lads come in, he seems to have some good ideas, so it'll be interesting to see how he progresses. Bournemouth at home, that was a poor performance. There's no two ways about it. I mean, the game against West Ham away got cancelled because of the death of the Queen, and we came back looking a little bit sluggish, and Bournemouth did do a little bit of a number on us. They worked us out and ultimately deserved a point, but we then went to Fulham and we absolutely smacked them. Many Brentford fans will be pleased, obviously, to hear this, and obviously you'll know the scoreline. I'm guessing it's pleased many of you, given that Fulham, I believe, are your big rivals in that part of London. Fulham are getting plaudits, doing well, top six I think they were at the time. We thought this would be a tough game, and we went there and we just dominated. Regardless of the sending off, it was actually much like the game against you a lot last season when, despite the fact you had a player sent off, I don't think that would have made any difference to the performance or the scoreline. I think we set out with great intent against you last season, and I think we looked like we would go on and win that game. And it was the same against Fulham. We started the game and you're just thinking, we're going to win this. Callum Wilson hit the post very early on. Obviously, they get the man sent off and we steamroll them. But happy with the start. 1-8. We are 7th in the table as I record this. It's huge progress. You compare it to last season, it's huge progress. But what we are seeing on the pitch, what we're seeing on the training ground, the stories coming out of the club, I can't fail to be happy. The club is heading in one direction, and that is upward. And obviously, there's a transfer window to come in January, and we are now a club that will strengthen in positions that we need to strengthen when the time comes.
So there's Norm, and we're going to come back to Norm in a little bit, but we just thought we'd have a little bit of breather and just talk about a few of the things there. Obviously, he's very happy with how things are going at the moment, how things are panning out this season. I mean, you know, just talking about Newcastle as a team themselves, I mean, where their strengths are. Their strengths, they're very strong at shooting from direct free kicks, which is something that we need to watch out for, because we do give away a lot of free kicks in the wrong area, I would say. They're also very strong at attacking set pieces. They're strong at creating chances through balls. They're strong at creating chances through individual skill. They're strong at creating chances through aerial duels as well. So they've got a lot of strengths. Where their weaknesses are finishing their scoring chances, stopping their opponents scoring or creating chances, defending against attacks down the wings, and also avoiding offside. Like I said, they try to get through balls, happening all the time. They control the game in our half. They attack through the middle. They attempt crosses often. They take a lot of shots. They like to keep hold of the ball. They rotate their first 11, and their opponents play aggressively against them normally. So that looks like we're going to have quite a lot on our plate, doesn't it, the Allard?
Yeah, it does. I think they come at you from all sides, don't they? I said Almir on, and to be honest, he was at Newcastle before, wasn't he? He'd been there for years, I think. He wasn't part of the
new regime.
The new regime. I got that completely wrong. I just, for some reason, I associate him more with, I just think he's been good, look decent this season. They come at you from all sides. I don't know if Saint-Maximin's going to be fit or not. He's an interesting player, isn't he? He's kind of like got everything. But at the same time, it's sometimes hard to fit him into a really good team. And he didn't play last weekend, and they must have had one of their best performances of the season, I would think, if they beat Fulham 4-1. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a full-on game. You know, I think it'll be absolutely end-to-end. It'll be nothing like the Bournemouth game. It'll be completely the opposite to the Bournemouth game, and we're going to have to figure out how to cope with them.
Definitely. So listen, let's go back to Norm, see what else he has to say about Newcastle, and then we'll come back and we'll have a little chat after that.
The transfer window itself, I've mentioned the players that we brought in last January, Trippier being the standout, and obviously Bruno Guimarães is a player who I believe will go on to be world class. I think if he's in that Brazil team in the World Cup in Qatar, people who haven't got their eyes open already will have them opened. And obviously, there are already rumours about a potential move to Real Madrid. They're sniffing around, which is understandable. You know, if Newcastle United don't get in the Champions League in the next two seasons, I would say, I would imagine someone like Bruno would be tempted to move on, because this is a player who ought to be and who wants to be in the Champions League. So he's coming to Newcastle because we're an ambitious club, because he believes we can reach those levels. But if we don't, then of course there's always the danger of losing him. In terms of the transfer window just gone, Nick Pope, a sensational signing really for £10 million. He's already proven to be probably the best keeper that I'll see at Newcastle United in my lifetime, and that's no exaggeration. His ability to not make saves, because he patrols the sort of 30, 35-yard area of the pitch is spectacular. He doesn't need to make that many saves, but when he does, what he does really well is he uses his legs. I have never seen a goalkeeper make that many saves with his legs. He can get down quickly, he's huge, and he can get down really quickly and make those blocks with his legs. And obviously, he's very good at claiming crosses, and his distribution's fantastic as well. So Martin Dubravka, very much loved by Newcastle United fans, but very indicative of where we were at the time. Dubravka was one of our best players, he was vital to the team. But the standard that we were at the time, he stood out because he was that little bit better than the kind of mediocrity that he was surrounded by in general. However, Nick Pope's come in and you're talking a completely different level. So a great signing. And obviously, the signing of Sven Botman, huge, huge potential. The man is absolutely giant. He's incredibly comfortable on the ball and he's a huge threat in the air. You'll see that if you give away any corners and he starts the match, which I fully think he will, given his performance against Fulham away, then he's a real, real threat. You'll have to watch him closely, no doubt. And he's a man who I believe will go on to play for the Dutch national team, a player who could potentially make the World Cup squad. Just the comparisons of Van Dijk are obvious because they're both Dutch, but I just look at him as a centre-half who has something unique to offer, someone who you maybe can't compare to anyone else, and someone who in 4 or 5 years' time you'll be comparing other players to Sven Botman, basically. And finally, Alexander Isak, he's come in. He did really well in Real Sociedad. He was excellent for Sweden in the Euros in 2021. He had a bit of a wobbly season in his last one at Sociedad, but the potential's huge, massive fee. However, his debut against Liverpool, he was absolutely sensational. He played to his strengths, played the ball into his feet so he could turn, he could run onto it. Two brilliant finishes. Obviously, one, as I say, was disallowed, unfortunately. And, you know, we're trying to figure out how to play with him. He's injured at the minute, so whether he'll be back for this Brentford game, I don't know. It was a bit of a struggle against Bournemouth with him up top because, again, it's kind of adapting to how he plays. He's a tall lad, but he's very lean. He needs to pack on a bit of muscle, and he probably needs work on the training ground to make him more effective in the air, because he's just not effective in the air at all. And look, regardless of what style of football you play in the Premier League, even Man City, keeping the ball on the ground as much as he can, you have to be effective in the air if you're a centre-forward at some point. Obviously, Haaland is a player who can do that, right? If Man City want to pump balls into the box, they've got a player who can win crosses, who can win the ball from crosses. Isak's not really at that stage at the moment, so there's work there to be done, but his potential is enormous. So overall, I mean, the last two windows have been absolutely sensational. And in terms of squad strength overall, look, Isak was brought in because basically Callum Wilson is very injury prone, but Callum Wilson, when he is fit, is absolutely sensational. You look at his record at Newcastle United, he's averaged a goal almost every two games, and that is, you know, with the proviso of the fact that he's played in a terrible team for the first two seasons he was here under Steve Bruce, a team that created barely any chances, more or less reliant on Alan Saint-Maximin putting chances in to Callum Wilson. His finishing is quite frankly sensational, and I think that if he could stay fit, if he'd stayed fit for the last few years, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind he would be second choice behind Harry Kane, if not challenging him. That might sound like an exaggeration. I'm probably getting into sort of very subjective opinion here, but he is that good. And Ivan Toney, of course, has had a great season this season so far, an excellent season last season, called up the England squad, deservedly so. But I do think that Wilson, right now, I would say, in terms of, you know, when they're on the pitch, I believe that Wilson's a better centre-forward than Toney. Does Toney have the potential to surpass him? Of course he does. He's a young lad and he's doing brilliantly well. But right now, I genuinely believe that Callum Wilson is one of the best centre-forwards I've seen at Newcastle. And by God, I've seen some. The problem is, as I say, he's very injury-prone. But Isak's been brought in, and hopefully, you know, every time Wilson's out, Isak can slot into that number nine role, basically. And, you know, you look at the way, man, ESM's been out lately. He is on his day absolutely sensational. One player who has improved enormously under Eddie Howe is Miguel Almirón. Two great goals against Fulham, unluckily denied a hat-trick. He's a player who's been playing on the right-hand side of the pitch. There's been a lot of criticism. I've doubted he can do it because he's so weak on his right foot in terms of what he can do with it instinctively. He can't whip it crossing with it. He'll always come back on his left, always come back on his left. A lot of fullbacks can work that out. But he is still a very, very good player. And when he can get that ball on his left foot, it can be magical, as we saw against Fulham. He's really coming into his own, and he's clearly rated by Howe. And if Howe rates him in that position, then we as a fan base have to rate him. The midfield, you know, the strength and depth there. Bruno Guimaraes, as I've already mentioned. Jonjo Selvey's been out this season. He's a huge miss. I think he would be an important player in a game against a team such as yourselves. Sean Longstaff's starting to rediscover the form that he did under Rafa Benitez. Joe Linton, of course, has been converted into a midfield destroyer under Howe, and he's really progressed his career. Joe Willock, a player who is full of energy, he can skin players. He's come through that Arsenal academy, which has produced some wonderful talent over the years, and he's got that natural footballing ability combined with that technical training that he's been brought up with, you know, from basically being a kid, right, 5 or 6 years old as they're going to academies now. So there's another, he's a goal threat as well, so there's strength there. And at the back, I mean, centre-halves wise, you know, the first choice centre-half pairing, really, it's either a combination of Botman and Shea or Byrne and Shea. So you've got your left footer and your right footer. Byrne's been shifted out to left back in a couple of games this season with injuries to Matt Target. And to be honest with you, he's performing well there. He, again, had years under Graham Potter at Brighton, and it's inculcating him with, you know, these abilities that maybe he wouldn't have got if he'd, I don't know, let's say played for a manager like Sam Allardyce and he put him in as a big man at the back, right? He's a player who can play football, so he can play at left back. We saw him do it at Brighton as a wing back. And at right back, we've got Kieran Trippier, who, when he's injured, you could argue that we're a little bit lacking strength and depth there, right? Emil Kraft came in last season, and after being much maligned, he really upped his game and was excellent. But ultimately, you're not going to have a £4.5 million right back from, I think, you know, he could not barely getting a game in France to being the man who's kind of supplanting a world-class fullback. So there's a little bit of weakness, I would say, there, if I'm going to say there's a weakness anyway. But overall, I think the squad's stronger than it has been for years, and I do think that we will again strengthen at Christmas, and I'm absolutely confident we'll build on last season. Absolutely confident. I look at teams like West Ham and Leicester this season. I look at Crystal Palace, who I thought might kick on. They're struggling ever so slightly. I think there's a group, and I include yourselves in this, a group of 8 or 9 teams in that league who I believe could actually finish as high as 8th. We're one of them. I think that we have the capacity, the squad depth, the squad talent, the managerial talent to finish 8th. And I wouldn't go beyond thinking that we can finish 7th and perhaps get in the Conference League. I genuinely feel that the ambition at the club, the ambition of the players, the ambition of the manager is something that could lead us to finish as high as that this season. Put it this way, we'll definitely finish in the top 10. I'll say that right now. And that in itself is an improvement on last season. And what I'd also love to see, and what I believe will happen, is us to finish on more points. By that, I mean breaking the 50-point barrier, breaking 55 points again. That is a sign of progress. It means that we're heading in the right direction. And in terms of, you know, players who you ought to be looking out for as Brentford fans, I've already mentioned the big names. You know, Bruno, you'll see a dominant display by him. Knowing that Norgaard is injured for you, I do feel that that midfield battleground is going to be absolutely key, and I feel that Bruno Guimaraes has the capacity to stamp his authority all over the game. If Sean Longstaff is starting, he can sit that little bit deeper, which allows then Bruno and Willock the kind of space to use their talents, and with those two driving at you, it can be very difficult. So that'll be the key battleground. I would love to say that ESM is back, but it's been dragging on a while now, so he may well not be. Otherwise, of course, he's always incredibly dangerous. But the man to look out for, really, is probably Callum Wilson, because no matter what ball goes in the box, it might be a bad ball, it might be a fumble, it might be a stumble, it might be an outstanding cross, there's always a danger that Callum Wilson will get on the end of. The man's finishing is fantastic, so I'd say he's the man to look out for. And of course, set pieces. If Matt Target starts, he can whip a good corner in. Kieran Trippier can obviously whip fantastic corners in. Trippier is very dangerous, as you're probably aware of, from free kicks around sort of 25 yards out. So there are many players I think that you ought to be aware of. That's not saying that you can't cope them, because you've got very good players yourselves. But if you're looking for danger men in the Newcastle side, for once in my life, I can say there are probably four or five on the pitch that are capable of damaging any team in the league. And going on to the wider Premier League, you know, in terms of who I think will be bottom four and bottom three this season, I think your top four, you know, Man City 100%. I mean, they're going to cruise the league. Haaland is just beyond ridiculous. It's beyond ridiculous how talented he is. And obviously, you've got Kevin De Bruyne coming towards, I would say, the end of his peak years, but still at his peak, if you see what I mean. So Man City to win the league quite comfortably. I think Potter is working in a very strange situation under a chairman who seems a little bit off the handle. There is the potential for that to go disastrously wrong. I don't think it'll matter to Potter. I think he's in a very much a win-win situation at Chelsea, regardless of how it goes, because they don't really hold on to managers for more than 2 years. He might win a trophy. He'll walk away a very rich man, and he'll walk into another Premier League job because he's a good manager. To say they'll finish in the top four, possibly. I think Arsenal are looking very, very exciting this season. They've got a great squad of players. Arteta knows what he's doing. It's taken him a while to move on from that legacy manager of Wenger, but they're really heading in the right direction. They'll finish top four. So that's Man City, Arsenal, Spurs under Conte. Conte is a superb manager. I believe they'll finish top four. And I'd say that fourth place will probably go to either Chelsea or Liverpool. Although, admittedly, Klopp is really struggling at the minute. I'm getting very much latter days of Dortmund vibes from him there. But there's the five teams will finish in the top four, right? But Arsenal, Tottenham and Man City, definitely. And in the bottom three, very tough to say. Forest, 100%, I think. I mean, look, they're on the verge of sacking Steve Cooper. There's rumours that Rafa Benitez might come in. If Rafa comes in, it gives them a much better chance, I believe. However, they've just brought in far too many players. They've made the mistake that Fulham made the previous two times they came up. Not this time, but the previous two times they came up, by basically replacing more or less the whole team that got them up in the first place, smashing that spirit that got them up and starting from scratch. It's a disastrous policy. I rate Cooper as a manager, but they've made mistakes. I think they'll get relegated. Wolves, I believe, will struggle. They just look weak all over the park. Take out a couple of their key players and they don't really offer much. Whoever they bring in has got a job on their hands. Will they get relegated? Tough to say. Watching Fulham on Saturday, I do think they'll sink down the table. However, they've got points on the board at the moment that suggest, barring a disaster, they'll pick up enough between now and the end of the season to stay up. So it's another tough one. Crystal Palace, I feel, will be sucked into a relegation zone, potentially, despite the fact they've got what I believe to be a good manager and good players. There's always that kind of danger of this momentum kind of dragging you in. Leicester look like they're in trouble, but I'm going to put Leeds alongside them. I think Marsh has got the right idea as to what he's doing, but I just don't think they've strengthened enough over the summer. And I think losing Phillips is absolutely huge for them, despite the fact he didn't play much last season. I mean, he didn't play much last season and the struggle, right? So I think Leeds may be down there. So if I had to plump for three right now, I would go Bournemouth, Forest, Leeds. There we are. Might be completely wrong, but that's how I'm feeling right now. And in terms, obviously, of our previous matches against you, last season, fantastic 3-0 draws. I say, very chaotic. First game after the takeover, Ivan Toney scoring twice. You know, the script couldn't have been written by the world's best, you know, best minds. It was a madness. And the game down at your place, I was lucky enough to be there. You know, obviously limited tickets. Really enjoyed the new stadium. Not a patch on Griffin Park, but it could be, and it will be, I'm sure. We comfortably beat you. We're in terrible form. You obviously picked up after that, right? I know that you had a series of injuries at the time, and those players came back, and you started getting the results again. But we got lucky when we played you, but I thought we did a very good number on you. And I really like how Frank sets you up. I really like Frank as a manager. He comes across as incredibly intelligent. He's always very well measured in what he says. And what I like about him is he doesn't make excuses. He never complains with that sort of bitterness that you get from certain managers when they complain. It's almost a case of, yep, this happened. It was our fault. Other things played an influence, but ultimately we move on and we learn from it. And I really like that with him. And it's obviously that he's held in great regards by you, Brentford fans. I like your style of play. I really rate Rico Henry. I think he's a wonderful player. Big fan of Damsgaard. Obviously, I know that he's had injury problems, but on his day, he's a game winner. Ivan Toney's done incredibly well for him. But my favourite player, I mean, your goalkeeper, Raya, is fantastic as well. But my favourite player is Mbeumo. I absolutely love him. I love the appearance of him, the kind of socks down around his calves, the sort of shirt out, even just his look. He just looks like an entertaining player, and he never stops grafting. And I think he's a real threat. If he learned. If he could finish better, I think he'd be an absolute gem of a player, an absolute world class player. But you know, as he is right now, I really enjoy him. I really enjoy watching him. So when we're gonna have to see it is the Brentford player who I have a great deal of affection for. In this particular game at St James's Park, look, we have to be confident. I think that we have got the home advantage. I think we'll get at you from the kickoff. I think that with Norgaard being missing, as I say, we'll win that midfield battle. So I'm going to have to predict a tight game, but ultimately a Newcastle win. I spoke to Billy on a True Faith podcast a couple of nights ago, as you're listening to this, and I predicted 2-0, and I'm going to stick with that. And obviously, if that's not the case, if you get a draw or you win, then you are welcome to get in touch with me and just laugh, basically. That's fair enough. I can take it. So ultimately, it's been lovely speaking with you all. I wish Brentford all the best for the rest of the season. Any of you fans travelling up to Newcastle, hope you have a cracking time. I'm sure you already were. It's a brilliant away trip, some great pubs. Can't recommend highly enough the Forth or the Trent House or the Bodega, all pubs that I really love. The Crown Passard on the Quayside is another good one as well. And hopefully I will be down at Brentford later on in the season to see us play you at your place. Thanks ever so much now. All the best then. Bye.
So that's Norm from True Faith Podcast, and I very much look forward to seeing Norm on Saturday. We're going to be meeting him midday, like when that pub opens at midday, okay? We're going to be seeing him in the pub up in Newcastle as well. Looking forward to that, which should be all good, sharing ourselves a pint before the game and after the game. So this Newcastle game, the Ellard, how do you see it panning out? I mean, we've talked about their strengths. We've talked about our side. We've talked about the fact that, you know, defensively, we kind of know where we're probably going to go this weekend. You know, Pontus is out. You know, Ben Mee is the main man. You know, whether or not, you know, Pitnick's going to be in or out, we're not quite sure, but maybe he might be. Midfield, are we going to keep it the same? You know, who's going to be partnering up in midfield? How do you see this one panning out?
I'm not even sure what system we're going to play, whether we're going to go to 3-5-2 again, because It seems to me that we play 4-3-3 against teams where we think we'll have more possession, and then maybe 3-5-2, certainly against the better teams. But then sometimes I also think that's because all the better teams generally play with three attackers, which I think is what Newcastle do. So maybe we go three at the back, but then you've got to say, right, is Pinnock ready to come straight in? Could you go Pinnock, Ben Mee, and Ayer as your back three? Which for me, that's quite an exciting back three. I like the sound of that. But say Pinnock can't play, would you play Zanka as the middle of a back three, and then Iron and Ben Mee either side of him, or do you go to a back? Do you stick with a back four? And I don't know. There's a lot of conundrums there that Thomas Frank needs to figure out. And then moving forward from that, I think Janelt plays. He's going to be the holding midfielder for the foreseeable future without Norgaard. And then it's just a question of, you know, obviously, if it's four at the back, it's either Hickey or Ayer, but they could both play. If it's three at the back, then Rika Henry's, I mean, it's a no-brainer. He's playing. And then you just have to figure out where the rest of them fit in. There's a lot of, you know, does Mbeumo need a rest at the moment? I personally think keep him going. I think he's doing fine. I mean, he's, you know, yes, his goal scoring has never been quite at the level that everybody wants, but he still looks like a massive handful for opposition teams. And I guess Jensen starts. I mean, Jensen's at the moment having a great season, as far as I'm concerned.
And the question is Damsgaard? Because obviously Damsgaard has come with real cotton. You know, we put him in cotton wool to start this season because he wasn't quite ready. We had to get him to get weight. We had to get him to get game time. He had to understand the English game. And we've brought him in, and he's like a bit of a super sub coming on with sort of 15 minutes to go. But you know, we're getting to the situation now where, like, you know, he is becoming a starter, and he started against Bournemouth on Saturday. I mean, how did you think his contribution was on Saturday?
I covered it in the post-match podcast, in that I think he's been asked to play. When he started against Bournemouth, he was asked to play on the left, and I'm not really sure that he gives us width on the left, because he gets dragged inside quite a lot. That's maybe a problem we've had with, I don't know, maybe since Ben Rama's left, in terms of actually having proper width out on the left. So he's going to either play there, or maybe plays in a midfield three, but I'm not sure you do that with Jensen. So it's difficult, really, where you sort of fit him in. I think that's a bigger problem. He looks like a, I mean, he looks like a great player. He creates. He's got skills. He's got natural touch. He's got vision. He knows what's going on around him all the time. Fitting him in is probably the biggest challenge, and I think that needs a bit more work at the moment.
That's right. So, I mean, just coming to the match, we're playing Newcastle Saturday. Big game for the Bees fans. Like I said to you, some leaving on Friday, some leaving on Saturday morning. I mean, like I said, I'm going to go up there early. I'm up with Laney on a Friday night. So we're going to be going to all sorts of places we've got lined up, I think, on Friday night. How about yourself, the LR? Are you looking forward to it? Because I don't think you were there last season, were you?
No. And the problem this season is it fits around a birthday weekend, so I'm not going to be there on. You lot are going to have to be cheering them on for me on Saturday.
Oh.
I did my well. It's, you know, everything going on with the trains and stuff like that. It's virtually impossible to do in a day. I'm not a massive fan of driving to games. I am, you know, carbon footprint and flying. Oh. Well, that's a bit of an excuse. I flew last time. I think I went to Newcastle.
Oh.
So I won't be there this weekend.
Oh, no.
I'm copping out. Yeah. We battled my way to Bournemouth last weekend with no trains and stayed the night. And yeah, I've got stuff going on this weekend. And this was a game that it just doesn't quite fit in, unfortunately. So you lot are just going to have to, you know, do it for me. I've been there a few times over the years, and I'm sure you'll enjoy the climb up the stairs to get to the way in. That's always, you know,
I've been in training. For that one.
Yeah. Your local, anywhere where you can find 30 flights of stairs to climb, office block.
Yeah.
Get in there for a bit of practice.
Yeah, go to Trillick Tower down in Lavett Grove or something
that. Yeah, absolutely. It's close to that, isn't it?
So anyway, I said, looking forward to the weekend. Loads of Beast fans going down. Like I said to you, loads of bars and pubs that we're going to be checking out. Like, check out Besotted. We might have a little bit of information as to where the people are going to be drinking. Also, listen to True Faith podcast as well. And a few of the other Newcastle podcasts as well, because they'll be giving lots of information for fans as well to actually kind of be doing this stuff. So but just coming back to the game at the weekend, the Ellard. What are your thoughts on a score prediction?
It feels like another 2-2, 3-3. I mean, another 3-3 is what I meant, but you know, 2-2, something like that. I think we'll be very, very happy to escape with a point, I would say. And it could well have to be high scoring for us to get a point.
That's right. And I'm going to go bonkers again, and I'm going to go for a 3-3 draw. I can't even remember what I said on the True Faith podcast, but they caught me on the hop that one. But just looking back at it, like I said to you, a draw will be very happy with. Let's go for a 3-3 draw, a bonkers 3-3 draw. We'll all have a great weekend. Everyone will go watch the game and come back afterwards and a few beers afterwards and then enjoy themselves. So anyway, so listen, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Everybody have a safe journey up to Newcastle, however you're getting there. Hopefully you're going to get there safe. Hopefully you get there in time. Like you said to you, there are slight inconveniences due to the strikes, but we unfortunately just have to deal with that, because these are the things that we have to deal with in our lives. But as football fans, we know how to deal with things which are out of our control, and we will do that. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and write us a lovely review on iTunes or any other else. Just give us a nice review. Don't forget to buy us a beer if you want to, besotted.com/beer. Also, if you want to join Besotted Global, besotted.com/global, which is our little social media community, so join that as well. But other than that, I am very much looking forward to going up to Newcastle and linking up with the Newcastle posse up there as well, having a few beers with all the characters out there, and fingers crossed that the Bees will be doing the business. I'm Billy Grant, and I've got the Yellard in the place.
Yeah, it just occurred to me, if I was a suit, Bill, I could just like click my fingers and appear there and then click my fingers and come home, and that would have worked.
That would have done it. That's what I expected you to say, but you went on some long-winded birthday nonsense, Lee, I'm saying, which is all good. So Soup Ellard will be there on Saturday. We'll see him in the boozer at midday, because he'll click his fingers at 11:59, be in Newcastle, watch the game, and he'll be back home for a cup of tea at 5:15. Fair play to you.
And hoping for no collateral damage.
That's right, no collateral damage at all. Anyway, like I said to you, I'm Billy Grant. I've got the Ellard in the house.
Goodbye, see you later. Come on, you Bees.
Come on, you Bees, as we say. I'm going to do a Newcastle. I'm going to go up there and train. We could beat the strikes, as we say. Come on, you Bees.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.